One Wednesday, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, will return, and for all eternity, there will only be Wednesday forevermore. And on that last Wednesday, humanity will send forth our representatives to meet him. One woman, a champion bruised and broken, yes, but not bowed and never overcome. For she was unwilling to acquiesce to fate. She refused to ever submit to despair, and she rejected the hopelessness of her fight. Rather, in the dust and the ashes of a shattered humanity, stands one woman screaming out into the unending void as the hostile forces of ignorance and poor rhetoric assailed her. She took her stand upon that firm rock, which is not a rock, but is in fact the Criswell College. And so it will be on that Wednesday that the lion of the tribe of Judah will find the lioness of humanity kneeling over the fetid corpses of all who defiled her. And on that Wednesday, as she looks up at him, wiping the blood from her blackened brow, he will whisper to her grimly, "You must be Dr. Sarah Spring." That will be the Wednesday of Wednesdays. But this Wednesday is not that Wednesday. And on this Wednesday, what greater fortune have we than to turn our attention to consider the grit of this greatest of heroes, Dr. Sarah Spring!
Yes, good. Thank you, sir. That was really something. That was really something. I was not expecting that either. I was expecting a story like kicking people down the stairs, and that it took a totally different turn, but that is amazing. Thank you. And yes, just to make a clear connection between grit, the food, and that we are indeed today talking about grit, resilience, just to make that very, very clear.
Okay, as I was preparing for today's chapel, I got some little nods and nudges, and I love when God has a plan come together, that I am indeed the right person for this topic. So I feel like Mr. Norris's intro is not that far off. For example, Dr. Sanders told me last week, "Spring, you can take a punch." And I'm going to give that story without context. But God really provided confirmation, though, in a meeting with our fearless leader, Dr. Creamer, yesterday. So less than 24 hours ago. In this meeting, we were talking about the systems that exist in Criswell, and that we don't want to be mired in the past. We want to be able to be present and to move forward. And Dr. Creamer looks at me in the meeting and says, "Dr. Spring, how long have you worked here?" And I said, "Well, this is my fourth year." And he said, "You've really dug in there like a tick." And that is that not the perfect image for this message? So if you hear nothing else I say, men and women of Criswell, dig in like a tick. And thank you for Dr. Creamer being such a good sport. I did warn him that I was going to mention that. And then he did also finish it off by saying he meant it as a compliment. Yes. As we start this morning, I want to ask you why. Why are you at Criswell? And as you think about that, I just want to point out that some may think it's a little early in the semester to be talking about resilience, but I think we are already at a point where this is absolutely necessary. You heard from Dr. Sanders about making the choice, the best choice for your life, and then you heard from Dr. Moore about how to have healthy boundaries that allow you to protect that choice. And then this is a continuation of that message about what happens when, even when you're doing all of the right things, you get knocked down, either because you made the wrong choice or, even worse, when you made the right choice and things still don't work out. Because you're already noticing, right? Students are starting to miss class. Things are starting to get heavier. Deadlines have started to happen, or maybe they just whizzed by. And dark thoughts are already starting to creep in for some of us, that we don't belong here, that we shouldn't be here, that we can't do this. If you're anything like me, my inner voice talks to me in a way that I would never speak to another living human being, another image bearer of Christ. And so if you're anything like that, hopefully this message is for you. And I always joke that Dr. Kieser and I are not built of the same material, that this man really is grit and resilience, and I have learned my lessons the hard way. Some of my students know that I really struggled in my PhD program, which is why I am also equally qualified to talk about this message. I had 3 years to work on the dissertation, and I wasted two of them. I was so paralyzed by fear and self-doubt, and really allowed that to spiral, so that I kid you not, I made no progress at all for 2 years in the PhD program. And so when I talk to you about these things and about what God has shown me, these really are things that I have worked through. I would never give you advice for something that I haven't done myself and that is not a philosophy that I follow myself. So today's verse, there are lots of verses, and I'm sure there's many in your mind that talk about this very subject, but the one that I want to talk about is Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. And you know, as the English professor, I'm going to talk about context first. So let's talk about what is happening in this verse. Now, and it's important because we start the verse with therefore, which means we are making a connection to what has come before. And what is Hebrews 11? That is our hall of fame of faith. So in verses 17 through 19, we have personal examples of faith such as Abraham. 20 through 25, amazing feats from the Old Testament. 35 through 38, again, this is chapter 11, hardships faced by those faithful ones. And then in 39 and 40, God's love for us is the only reason that he has waited to fully deliver his victory that he has promised. Those verses lead us to, therefore, because of these things. Since we're surrounded by that cloud of witnesses that has just been, right, really listed, categorized for us. All of this prior reasoning, and including chapter 10's warning that we are, right, a warning about falling away, that this definition of godly faith, this catalog of heroes, this list of victories, but more importantly, the reminder of suffering. It's not just victory. It is a reminder and a promise of suffering, but through that, it is the encouragement of God's love in the presence of that. And this has led to this point, which is our application of truth. It is turned from the recitation, the listing, to exhortation. We have turned from third person to now first person. Because we clearly know that all of God's work that he has just listed out for our benefit is meant to inspire us to hold fast as he continues that work. So not only are these faithful to be seen as examples, but then verse 2, if you follow into chapter 12, then Christ has given us the perfect example that is the continuation. In other words, this is faith that is worked out through endurance, submission, and discipline. We're focusing only on verse 1, but the chapter continues by discussing the sufferings to be endured and really then finishes with another plea to complete the race. Notice there are two different words here, and I consulted with my colleagues from the Greek. that he makes a distinction in verse 1 that there is sin and there is weight. There are two different things that are mentioned here that are obstacles to the race that we must throw off. I love that the author, at least in my interpretation of things, then that is both internal forces and external forces. It is things that are both within my control and things that are without, or right beyond my control. Dr. Sanders calls this the parable of the soils. So some of it is on me and how I respond to things, but some of it is just the world. It is the actions of others. It is things that happen around us. So this weight, right, plus my sinful responses and actions, anything and everything that slows me down and stops me. Dr. Creamer mentioned this in his convocation chapel, that we know in our souls that this world is not the way that it should be. And so for you, maybe that is the unfairness of the world around us that entangles us. You know that this is not right. There is injustice. There is evil in the world that appears to us to not be punished. I have a very close family member that is really struggling with this at the moment, and it is affecting this person's faith, this ability to believe in God, because God is not acting in the way that my family member wants God to act. Jonathan Edwards, yes, the sinners in the hands of an angry God, Jonathan Edwards, said that this world should be, right, hopefully the only version of hell that believers see. And sometimes, I mean, good grief, Dr. Moore and I were walking down here, I saw yet more news about explosions in the Middle East. And so absolutely, if we allow that to be our perspective and our focus, absolutely easy to slow down or to stop running altogether. Interestingly, the word run here, and again, I checked with my colleagues, the Greek word to run the race with endurance, to run, and Dr. Sanders, is this correct? It when used elsewhere in Scripture, it actually means to fight.
It's the race.
Oh, it's the
race is a fight.
Yes, oh, sorry. Whoops. Thank you. Thank you, sir. One more time, Dr. Sanders, the race is a fight. Okay. Well, and I love that. That just shows you how active this verse is. There is nothing passive about this particular verse. This requires action. Therefore, we have been given truth, we have been given examples and encouragement, and action is needed and required. Lay aside, run, or fight, right? Battle, endure. We are surrounded by this cloud of witnesses. That means it is currently happening in the present. So God gives us encouragement and these examples. He knew, right, already, our God is not surprised. My mom has a saying that the world is not falling apart, it is falling into place. And for those of you who want to look up a past chapel, Dr. Moore has an amazing one on this about how all things hold together in Christ. And it is evidence that God does not abandon us in hardship. So the question is, right, so then what is my perspective? What do I focus on? And then we move to what acts as an imperative, a command. Let us. There is only one right response. There is no other option. Suffering is now a training ground for strength and endurance. So what do I do then as a result of my focus? So how do we do this? Because I know most of you know this verse, and it's the application, it's the action of the verse that is hard. Brain science actually has a term for this. It's called planning fallacy. It's a cognitive bias that leads us to underestimate the time and our resources and our difficulties in achieving a goal. And that's because our brain, our human brains, especially in this fallen world, have a tendency to focus on optimistic outcomes while overlooking possible obstacles and complexities. So we are motivated to start, but then we end up frustrated and disillusioned when the reality doesn't align with my oversimplified expectations. And this results in us giving up. Now, a brain coach would tell you things that sound very ambiguous. Learn from setbacks. Practice resilience. Embrace the process. Be realistic. Here's my favorite, adapt. So let me tell you what this looks like for me, from my own experience. I mentioned earlier that I did no work on the dissertation for 2 of the 3 years that I was supposed to have been working on it. That became very clear to me when Texas A&M normally only offered 2 years of funding for the dissertation, and I had to request in writing permission to stay for a 6th year, for my 3rd year of the dissertation. And then I realized I've got to do something about this. Because when I say I wasn't doing anything, I really need you guys to understand I was doing nothing. That's probably not true. I was reading, and turns out reading is its own form of procrastination. There was always something else to read. There was always something else, you know, knowledge to acquire. But then I realized, like, I'm still spinning my wheels. All of the knowledge in the world is not going to help me if there is no action attached to this. My dissertation chair was a male, and I was even ducking into the women's restroom on campus if I saw him coming down the hallway. So I need you to Dr. Brown, you should laugh. It's humorous now because, thank goodness, God willing, right, and God is great, even when we don't deserve it, I'm standing here now in front of you. But I need you to understand, like, that's how paralyzed I was in terms of this process. And in fact, my favorite activity was sleeping during this time, because it was the only time that my brain was not actively telling me what a failure I was for not moving forward. And my sister finally said, I think you need help. This is not normal. And so it turns out my office mate actually had done academic counseling at Texas A&M. And I didn't even know that was a thing. But it is, and they had counselors that specialized in the difficulty of academic life and what that looks like. And that was a very eye-opening experience for me, was talking to somebody about my writing, about my dissertation. So it was almost like couples counseling, but with my dissertation. Because it really was a breakup, I think, at that particular point. We were not doing well. We were separated. I guess it didn't actually even exist, so maybe he was imaginary. He was like an imaginary boyfriend at that point. So based on the things that he told me and the things that I now have kind of thought through in years since, here's kind of my list of steps that have worked for me, and hopefully will inspire you to come up with your own steps. Number one, be in the Word every day, all day. More if you're going through a season of doubt. It had never occurred to me to pray about my dissertation. I know that sounds strange, but because I was at a state institution and I was in the English department, I was not surrounded by believers. And I didn't have anybody who asked me, well, are you praying about it? And when I tried to talk to my father about it, his advice was, just do it. Which, unsurprisingly, was not helpful. He's military, but so that was the best advice he could give me. If you hate it so much, just do it, and then it will be done. But that I had never invited God into that process. And then realizing that because God speaks to us through words and God is the creator of words, why had I not done that? My favorite story about Dr. Moore Well, one of my favorite stories, and this was before I really got to know her. In one of her chapels, her husband actually was present with her daughter, and he offered up a comment during the Q&A that when she was going through a difficult time and was really struggling with how to pray through it, he saw her praying the prayers of the faithful. That she couldn't find the words, so she was using other prayers to still be in the Word and to still pray, even when she was so devastated that she couldn't form her own words. Be in the Word. Bram Stoker in Dracula says that knowledge is stronger than memory, and we should not trust the weaker. Now, what do I mean by that about the Word? If I didn't have knowledge of the Word, firsthand knowledge all the time, right in front of my face, I would rely too much on memory of what I think the verses say. Some of you who have been up to my office know I have a coffee cup that says I can do all things through a verse taken out of context. Because if I'm not paying attention to that verse, my attention goes to the first part, which is I can do, and then it's easy to forget the rest. Or if I just look at that verse, I forget that Paul is in prison while talking about this. I forget that you have to get through chapter 1 where he talks about to live as Christ and to die as gain. And all of that has to be knowledge, has to be in front of my face. Or why I don't trust Romans 8:28. Dr. Creamer knows. All right, all things work together for good. Oh, that means good things are going to happen to me. And it's good. Oh, that means any number of things. And I forget the very next verse, which is that I am to be, right? This goodness is me being conformed to the image of Christ, which means suffering, taking up my cross. So knowledge of these things is essential. And writing it down, putting it in front of your face. I started writing verses just constantly and putting them everywhere on sticky notes so that they were constantly, the words of truth were in front of me so that I could see them with my eyes closed, because then that way I could, what felt true, I could dispute with what is true. Create a plan. And this is, again, is the writing. I'm the English major, so I know that I'm going to have to talk about writing. Write it down. There is something beautiful that happens. Writing is thinking. So it's the act of that makes for me, makes things real. It causes something to happen cognitively for me. So the writing of verses, I can bring them more easily to mind. Come up with a plan. I actually left it on my coffee table this morning, but I found my list of rules that my academic counselor at A&M had encouraged me to write. I came up with my own version, kind of my own commandments for myself for the dissertation process. And one of my rules is that the only opinion that matters is mine. About the dissertation, I want to clarify this, yes? But that, right, that if I was happy with my topic, if I was happy with the research, if I was happy with these things, right, that's what mattered. Because I loved and adored my dissertation chair, and I was very terrified of disappointing him. But it's my dissertation. I also wrote that, right, that 5 minutes or one paragraph counts as progress. I redefined those words for myself. Because I have in my mind what it's supposed to look like, and then I would get upset and feel defeated that I didn't do enough that day. I didn't write enough. I didn't read enough. I didn't understand enough, and I needed to change what that looked like. I will not talk myself out of it before I have written my way into it. That's probably the biggest one for me, because it's easy to not even start. But sitting down and writing and working through it, then, right, I promised myself that I would do that. And one of them, it sounds silly, but I give myself permission to fail. Because you and I both know that failing, I learn more in those instances than I ever have in my terms of my victories. And I'm happy to show this to you. I will bring it to campus at some point, and I can definitely show it to you. But it helped having that, because then that was taped to my desk. And by the time all of this finally started clicking, I did the whole entire dissertation in less than 8 months. Thank you. Okay. And I'm telling you, God is good, because I graduated then on a Friday and started at Winthrop University as a professor on Monday. God really lined things up. And it was just, and it was like he was saying, I knew you could do it. I knew the entire time. I was the only one who doubted that I could do it. So be in the Word, create a plan and have that vision and write it down. I even wrote down bunny trails, like things, like if I was like, I'm the stupidest person that has ever lived, right? I would write it down, because then it got it away from me. It removed it from here and here where it feels true, and got it. Because then if I look at it on paper, it's easier to say, well, that's silly. That's not true. But if it's here, it feels more serious and feels more deadly to me and my sense of being. So again, write it down. Get rid of it. Tear it up. Burn it. Do whatever you need to do visually so that you remove it from you. Oh, and I'm so sorry, Dr. Sanders. I'm running late on time about our panel. Okay, third, and I'm Baptist, so there's only three. So seek help from professionals if needed. The academic counselor was not a believer, but he was really able to help me get a perspective on what was happening to me. And he's the one who helped me realize that the way I talked about my dissertation was stopping me from completing it. A colleague of mine in graduate school talked about it like it was an out-of-work spouse who was abusive and alcoholic and like on the couch. He had created a whole persona for the dissertation. And these were the people that I was around all the time, and I realized we would sit around in groups and gripe about the dissertation. And in my mind, that was solidarity. That was community. That was hurting me, not helping me. Because all it was then was a constant negative reinforcement of all of the things that I was afraid of. So seek help from professionals if needed, but cultivate relationships with people who have different strengths than you. It is not an accident that I have dug in like a tick to Dr. Moore, because she excels at things that I am weak in. That I follow Dr. Sanders around and go to taco joint with him at every possibility. Because, right, he has strengths that I do not have. And so not just people that are on your same level, but you have to have the people who challenge you and speak truth into your life and who will push you forward. You don't want to be, right, this is like being the king of the idiots, right? You don't want to be here, because I know that's the tendency. Then I can be the best of that group of friends, and then it's easy to say, well, I'm doing fine. Look at this person over here. Don't let that be your reality. You need people that are going to challenge you to move forward and who will help you stop that spiral and get you to change mindsets. So, because there's a difference between talking through something which stirs it up and that's emotional distress versus talking that leads to a solution and mental rest. Very key difference there. And so, right, this is all helps, because the other verse that I was running secondary to this is Galatians 6:9, let us not grow weary of doing good, for only, right, in due season, that is a time that is unknown, we will reap if we do not give up. Dr. Sanders, I was really, really struggling one semester, and the reason I'm, again, speaking to this, Dr. Creamer doesn't even actually know this, I was struggling so much in this semester of Criswell, that I had typed up my letter of resignation. It's still on my computer and I keep it as a reminder. I was so frustrated. I was doubting God's call on my life, and I thought, this is it, I'm done. I can't do it, I don't wanna do it. And Dr. Sanders, in lunch at Taco Joint, said to me, are you in ministry? Yes. And then, right, and there was silence. And I'm just looking at him. He goes, to be in ministry is to take the hit. He said, are you going to take the hit? So I started today asking you your why, But now I want you to shift to the more important question. What are you willing to do to keep your why? Thank you very much. Ty, is your facial hair different? It is. Okay.
This is your seat?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to sit in different places? Oh, I'm sorry, Ralph. We messed up your mic rotation. Okay.
We good? Yeah, that was so good. Let's applaud again. I think that's one of the toughest topics to talk about, because you have to be so vulnerable about it too, and it's just kind of, I don't know, weird talking about yourself sometimes, at least for me. I'll say one thing I was kind of thinking of, and I think this is because we've talked a lot about what passage we were working on today. I think one of the things that I've really grown to appreciate about the New Testament since teaching here, because when you teach survey classes, like, you have to teach all of the passages, you know, like, if you're just preaching, you kind of pick and choose which passages, and you kind of gravitate to the ones you know. With survey, you kind of, even if it doesn't come up in class, you kind of have to be aware because somebody might ask something. It's in reading through the New Testament so much over the last few years, the sheer amount of passages that are totally about you have to pick yourself back up. Like, it's going to go poorly sometimes. It may be your fault. It may not be your fault. Like, and I think when we were talking about, you know, how is it that students kind of end up with the life that they want, or even us, how do we end up with the life you want? Like, we can plan and we can do a lot, but every once in a while you end up somewhere that it wasn't your fault, or maybe it was your fault, but what are you going to do about it? And so I was just so excited about this topic specifically. I was wondering with y'all too, one of the things I took away from her was her point on, like, writing it down and journaling. That's actually something I do, and I don't think we've really talked about it. I don't journal a whole lot, but when it's going poorly, I'll start doing it. It's almost like removing the poison from me on some level. Like, it gets the stuff out a little bit. And I don't really, when I do it, I don't really even evaluate what I'm writing so much. I'll just write it all out, and I'll put it through a paper shredder myself. But I think that's helpful.
Good.
I'm wondering if y'all have ways you do that or other things that you do in that situation.
I'm going to admit I don't journal very often. Do you journal, Terry?
First of all, I don't know how to work microphones. I'm not a journaler. No, I yell. Mm-hmm. And I yell in my car. I'm in my car a lot because I live in Arlington, and so I just yell. So that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. I was in community group once with this guy, and this was when the goat yoga thing was happening. Do y'all remember this? Like, people started doing yoga with goats, like, a few years ago. And he was trying to wrap his mind around it, and he's like, is this, like, rage yoga? And so I was like, what is rage yoga? And he's like, that's what I do. You do yoga, but you, like, yell profanity. I'm not saying this is what you should do. But he was, like, apparently doing yoga and, like, just cursing, like, loudly cursing while doing yoga, which seems, like, incongruous with, like, the yoga vibe. I don't know. Do you rage yoga?
Do you rage yoga, Terry?
Again, I don't know how to work microphones. I rage, but and sometimes I do yoga. See if you can fix my microphone. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've ever done them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Yes?
Yes.
See? I'm Gen X, so.
No, I cheated, and Ralph told me how to turn this one on.
Oh, sorry. But yeah, I rage and I do yoga, but I don't know that I've ever done it at the same time. Sometimes I rage and I do the dishes at the same time, but I don't know that I've done rage yoga together.
Yeah,
that would be fun, though. Maybe I'll try it and I'll report back. Mm-hmm. Next chapel.
I think everybody has their thing. Some of my students laughed at me once when I told them that I actually scheduled crying. but it's true. If I know I needed, there needed to be something cathartic. But the point was, is that I scheduled it so that there's an end point. because you can't tip over into then you spiral, right? But if it's just kind of getting some things out, Dr. Creamer's like, who have I hired? Thankfully I am safe until the end of June or July, but then Marilyn and I have to have a talk. But whatever your thing is, if it's rage, screaming, if it's whatever it is, but again, just make sure then your focus comes back. So don't lose that. But I think God is big enough for the screaming, the crying, the wailing, the gnashing of teeth, the burning of the paper, the shredder. I love that. That's good. Whatever it is.
I was going to say, the one thing I think that's great about you is you do have a lot of grit. But, and I think this is important for all of you, it's important to have grit, but it also is important to feel the feelings. Like, you really care a lot. And caring a lot and seeing the world as it is requires dealing with those emotions, whether it's journaling them and shredding them or screaming in the car or doing... rage yoga or whatever you do have to feel those emotions. You shouldn't bottle them up. But at the same time, if you're going to be in ministry for sure, you do have to find a way to feel them and deal with them and continue functioning like Taylor Swift. You can do it with a broken heart. So I had to get that in.
Yeah,
For those of you who don't know the song, my walk-up music was Tom Petty, who is also very good at this. So the song was I Won't Back Down.
Yeah, so I think one thing, too, is just like thinking through, knowing all of y'all, like we're all different in the way we kind of outwardly express or even handle emotions. But we all have to do it in our own way. I think one of the things in my perspective, looking back on the taco joint conversation you were talking about, was kind of, I think one thing... Even if we like could play back the entire conversation, I think part of it was I was seeing things that you were going through that didn't look exactly what I'd gone through, but I've gone through things similar to that. And so I think part of like taking a punch and getting up is for yourself, like you have to keep going on. Like you can sit there for a second, but you can't stay down. But the other thing is sometimes it helps other people get up later too. Like just being open with like struggles that we've had, you know. I know you and I especially, I feel like, have had some similar, you know, instances in the past with different situations.
Dr. Moore and Dr. Keyser, I'm not sure have ever experienced defeat, but yeah.
My fantasy Maybe football team actually beat us this week. No.
And that might be the only defeat Dr. Keyser's ever had. This is it. Well, and maybe in Dr. Keyser's 30-year plan, it's to get beaten at one point. Maybe it's
just
on the
just
the
so that he can
plan.
Grow from it.
I think I now feel morally obligated to object to this. And I'll do it this way. In my dissertation, it's 2020.
That's now a book. Woohoo! Get it. It's amazing.
If you're looking to fall asleep, you don't need melatonin, just read my book. It's fine. So 2020, there's this virus going around the world. I don't have a job currently. I don't have a long-term job currently. I'm getting ready to finish a dissertation, taking an oral exam over all of theology for an hour and a half with two of my favorite theologians in the country. And I was terrified would be something like an understatement. And I had multiple panic attacks at this point. And I was scared. Like, there's just, like, a fear that happens there. And real quick, resource recommendation. I'm sure you've read Duckworth's Grit book. Or you seem to have read it, at least. So there's a book called Grit by Angela Duckworth. And it's one of the best books I've read in the last... One of the best non-theology books I've read in the last 5 years. And there's a podcast that I've never listened to, but it has an amazing title, and it is Do It Scared. Like, admit you're scared, like, be scared, and then, like, do it scared. Yeah. So it might be good, too, but it's got a good title.
There's another one, Adam Grant, our former colleagues, Dr. Burgess and Dr. Hunter, have mentioned him. He has a book called Think Again, and not from a Christian perspective, but talks about the power of being able to harness thinking and right, to change the way we think about things.
And I also used to run from my dissertation advisor. Like, if I heard him laughing across campus, I would hide. And I just admitted to all of you guys that I scream in the car on the way home. So
I just largely ignored mine.
Yeah.
This is not advice for how you should relate to us.
No.
Be really clear.
But it's an opportunity for growth.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, and to clearly say that these were strategies that did not work.
Yeah, for sure.
Do as we say, not as we do.
Yeah. So I think one thing that we really wanted to take away from this series, which we'll be talking again next week, Dr. Brown's going to be talking about not losing yourself in the virtual world and actually having a, you know, life in this world that we live in. But there's no way that you're going to go through life unscarred. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think, if you do all the right things and God loves you, and you just can't, because the Christian life is following Jesus. And where did Jesus go? He goes to the cross. And so where do you think he's leading you? You know? And so I think it's important for us to talk about this sometimes, because I think a lot of times people misunderstand Christianity and think, like, if I believe in Jesus, he'll protect me from all things. And the likelihood is he won't protect you. He'll steer you right into things. And that's normal, and that's okay, and it's still hard. It's really painful. But you have people you can talk to. You can come talk to us. But ultimately what you can't do is you can't stay down. You have to pick yourself up. You have to be able to take a punch. You have to, fair or unfair, you've got to find a way to keep going. So let's thank Dr. Spring one more time. Great message. And I also think we've got a bag up front with packets of instant grits, if you want to take some grits with you to grow some more grit. I've gotten confused on the grits.
Yes, we have party favors. There are 30 packets of instant grit.
Yeah, first come, first serve.
Yes, absolutely. So please take one, so that way, if it's not the tick analogy,
Dom's
that, that sticks
had 10
with you.
Today.
Yes, but yeah, grits. And for some of you who live in the dorm, you can make that in the microwave. That's a breakfast for you in the future. You're welcome.
Okay, you're dismissed. 7 days till Wednesday.